This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome to The Edge, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host for today, Brandon Shamutella. Amy is away, incognito again. She's at her own personal awards ceremony, getting the Federation Medal of Valor. So she is unable to join us today, but she will be joining us next week. But today I've got two very special guests with a third joining later. Patrick, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. This is my second podcast today, and it seems to be going pretty well for me.
Excellent. How are you? I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've been having a lot of fun. I've been, you know, laying on the floor, eating mushrooms, you know, things like that. So it's been a good time.
Interesting.
They're minty.
I've been finding people I like and treating them like garbage just to see if they like me back.
Excellent. Right on. And speaking of people we like, Dan.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Great. It's been a long time since we've podcasted together. It's been like a week.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Excellent.
How did you go so long?
I know. Dan joined us last week when we talked about the new Star Trek Discovery novel, Drastic Measures. And today he's going to be joining us with his co-host from Literary Treks, Bruce Gibson. He'll be joining us for the main feature. But we're going to be talking about the comic. And I figured it'd be great to have Dan and Bruce on again to talk about that. But before we get into that discussion, we're going to talk a little bit of news. Now, there's a lot going on right now. Now, we're recording this on April 16th, which is the first day that they've had production on season two. So they actually started filming today. So there is now Star Trek that we haven't seen again. Can you believe that?
Yes. Oh, that's exciting. Did any of you guys see Doug Jones' tweet where he was shaving his head? In preparation to play Saru again.
He's like screaming. He's like, ah!
It's good stuff.
Yes, I did watch that. So that was yesterday, I think he tweeted that. So he's shaving his head, getting ready for his makeup. So,
yep. It's happening.
Okay, more news that we have is Tig Notaro has been cast as... She's a comedian, which I'm not familiar with her work at all, so I'm hoping you guys can help me out with that. But she's a guest star as Chief Engineer Denise Reno of the USS Hiawatha. So we're going to be getting even more ships this year. That's the exciting news for me.
We are.
Yeah, so the USS cool. Hiawatha, that's interesting. Are you guys familiar with this actress, Tig Notaro?
I am not.
A little bit. I've heard a little bit of her stuff, mostly her story recently. She's a cancer survivor, and there's some stuff recently about her battles with that and how she's dealt with that. As far as her material, I haven't heard a lot of it, but she's very highly regarded by a lot of people whose opinions I like. So,
okay.
You know.
What is she like? She's a comedian. Is she a stand-up comedian?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with her or her work, but new chief engineer, USS Hiawatha, that's exciting. More ships, more Eagle Moss to clog up my shelves.
I was going to say, the Eagle Moss fans, myself included, if you could see, there's a bunch behind me, are going to be happy about that for sure.
They won't have to go so far into those deep cuts anymore, huh?
Yes. Yes. Now, Patrick, maybe you can look this up while I'm talking about it. Jonathan Rakes was just at a convention recently. And, Patrick, if you look up which convention that was, I didn't write it down here, but, he was talking at the convention, and he said that he's going to be directing episode 2 of the season, but he's also directing more than one episode. But he recently let it slip that this is a spoiler for season 2, so if you don't want to hear this, you can skip forward a little bit here. But this will not only include Pike, but flashbacks to a young Burnham and Spock as well. So Jonathan Frakes is continuing his modus operandi and giving us spoilers for the season. Dang it. But, you know, it's all over the internet.
Jonathan. Man, you're going to get a strongly worded letter from CBS again.
Along with the next contract to direct his next episode.
Exactly, yeah. And he's. I also heard he's directing a couple episodes this season.
Yeah, yeah. He said that he was doing more than one. So that'll be interesting to see. Considering there's only supposed to be 13 this season now, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to find out what convention that was, Patrick?
I was not.
Okay, well, that's fine.
It was the El Paso Comic-Con.
The El Paso Comic-Con. Now, I know Justin Ozer from Earl Grey was there, and that makes sense, because I think he lives in El Paso, Texas. But I know he lives down in that area of the country. Alex Kurtzman's going to be directing the first episode of the season. So he'll be back to direct some more as well. And showrunners Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts explained to the crowd that Star Trek Discovery Season 2 will edge away from the backdrop of war and into a more exploratory phase and a more diplomatic phase, steadily becoming a bit more of a Trekkian chapter. So that's interesting for Season 2 that we're going to be getting a change. So what do you guys think about that?
Definitely excited. I like when Star Trek gets deep into stuff like that, like exploration and diplomacy and that sort of thing. I really liked season one, but, you know, let's get away from the big war story and into something a little bit more, you know, the cliche when Picard said, "Does anybody remember when we used to be explorers?" You know, like, let's get into that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it. I don't know. I don't like the wording they used, but I'm okay with the premise of what they're going to be doing. I mean, you know, they kind of validated everyone who said this isn't my Star Trek in that sentence, and that doesn't sit well with me because it's still Star Trek to me. This is just more of the Star Trek we're used to, not the Star Trek we had this season.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do and if they continue on with the season-based arc. Like, how are they going to be telling this story? How are they going to do it? Are they going to try and, you know, do smaller arcs like they did in season 4 of Enterprise? But we just don't have that information yet, so it's all speculation for now. So, anywho, that's about all that we've got for news right now. So, should we bring in Bruce for the main part of our discussion on the Discovery Annual comic?
Sounds good to me.
Sounds like a great idea.
And joining us for our main portion of our discussion is the wonderfully handsome, rugged, charming Bruce Gibson.
I knew you were going to say that. Thank you so much.
How you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I always love talking about the books and comics, and if I can't do it on Literary Treks, I'll go to other shows and do it too.
What's Literary Treks?
It's a show here on Trek FM where Dan and I talk about Star Trek books and comics.
Hey.
Really? Yeah. Well, that's a good thing we got you guys on to talk about this, because that's quite the coincidence, eh?
Amazing. It's like somebody thought
about it. And actually, what we're going to talk about, we've talked about on the show before, but just not in great detail like this.
Right, yeah. So, for those that are joining the discussion here, we are going to talk about the comic in detail. So, I was trying to see if there's a name for it. I can't seem to find it. I think it's just called the Star Trek Discovery Annual. It's just come out, and it's written by Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson.
Yeah.
So, it's a pretty cool little story. But what we do here on The Edge when we talk about the literature portion of Star Trek Discovery is we're trying to determine what do we learn about the characters. Is there anything that helps us understand our characters a little bit more, maybe their motivations, who they are? You know, does this clarify some events for us that have been portrayed on screen? Because while these books and comics aren't canon per se, they are doing their best to keep them as close to canon as possible. And that's Kirsten Beyer's, you know, main role while working on Star Trek Discovery is to, you know, to try and fit everything together where possible. So basically, in a nutshell, I'll give a general overview of the story here. It's a story for Paul Stamets, and it tells the story of how they discovered the mycelium network. And it tells the story of how he met Hugh Culber. And it tells the story about how they got involved with Starfleet and brought this spore drive into being on the Discovery. So personally, I think this is a really interesting story to start with. First of all, let's talk about the choice of character. Talk about a Paul Stamets story. And what do you guys think of that? I'm surprised that we didn't get a Burnham story first off, you know, or a Saru story or something like that. So what do you guys think? Let's start with you, Dan. What do you think of having the first comic be a Paul Stamets comic? I know that we have the Klingon ones, but, you know, that's right. That's not a part of this. But
yeah, I think it's a really interesting choice. And I'm glad you brought up the Klingon comics. But yeah, this feels like the first kind of Discovery proper comic, because we get our Starfleet heroes in the Starfleet uniforms and we see Discovery and all that sort of thing. But yeah, Paul Stamets to me was always a really interesting character, and his first introduction on the show, he's kind of intentionally abrasive and rubs you the wrong way. So, and then over the course of the show, of course, grows from that, and we see many different sides of him. But I really like that we get this introduction here, because I feel like it gives him gives us a lot more understanding of who he was before that. And yeah, like I said, the fact that it's him, I think, is a really interesting piece to grab onto for this story, because he really is at the center of the main kind of technology that's featured in Discovery. And I think it's a mm-hmm. really good latching on point to really tell the origin story of Discovery.
Bruce, what do you think of Paul Stamets being the first character that we get a comic for?
Well, first of all, he's one of my favorite characters on Discovery, so I'm very pleased by that. But I am here thinking, why would they choose him to start off? Burnham, I can understand why not, because we get backstory on Burnham. We've seen some of her her time on Vulcan growing up and dealing with her father and dealing with her times on Vulcan and on the Shinzu and all that stuff. So I can see them saying, like, well, we don't need a backstory on Burnham. But then I guess they just probably went through the different characters and picked Stamets for whatever reason, because they could have gone with Tilly or someone else. And I think they just decided, why don't we start with Stamets? And I don't know why, but it's great to get a little of this backstory behind him and how he ended up with the spores and being on Discovery and such. So I think it was a good choice. Mm-hmm.
Patrick, what do you think of Paul Stamets? Do you think it's a good choice for first character to get an into the comic for?
I actually thought it was a great choice, and I think it's because he's the one who finds the spores, and getting to that point, I think that's really why they chose him, and they didn't go with mm-hmm. a Saru or a Tilly or someone else. I mean, they do mention Tilly in this comic book, too, and how she ends up, you know, ending up on the project and everything, and, I guess we'll get into it later, but he really fights to have her as part of his group, too. So I think this ties in a few things that maybe using other storylines wouldn't have done so quickly and so easily. And it does it in a 44-page comic book that, while, like you said, it's not fully canon, it feels like it fits perfect. There's nothing in mm-hmm. it that would make you go, that's not right.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a good point. I just want to point out that what Patrick said, this isn't just a story about Stamets. It's the backstory of the spore drive. Mm-hmm. So it's really two backstories in one.
That's a very good point, yeah, because the spore drive is a really major part of Star Trek Discovery, because it's the thing that sets it apart from the other Star Trek television series that we watch. So you're right. It is a backstory for the spore drive as well, which is pretty fascinating. So
I also feel like, maybe just as a quick interjection to add to something earlier, I feel like if they'd have gone with a different character, Burnham in particular, it might step on the shows of something the show might want to do. I feel like we're going to see a lot more Burnham-centric stuff in the show than we would in the comics. So Stamets mm-hmm. might have been a bit of a safer route to go as well. Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that it's the story of how he met Culber as well, like, it's something that they've talked about on screen.
Right.
So for us to see it in this time. Now, Patrick, you did mention the fact that we do get Tilly in this, and you say that he does fight for her at the end of the comic to get her as a member of his crew. But at the beginning, he's rather dismissive of her. Like, I think it's safe to assume that these letters that he's getting are from Tilly, these fan letters about the Mycelia Network. And to me, that was an interesting part of the story, because I never got that Tilly was quite that fangirlish over Stamets, at least as portrayed in the show. So I wanted your guys' take on that.
Well, Bruce? So I think, again, I it's not canon, so they could take some liberties, but I also think you can explain that away in canon by the fact that he's a major jerk. So once she gets to know him for him, it's very easy to step back and go, all right, well, he's brilliant, but I don't want to be near him. I don't want to be around him. I don't like him as a person, you know, and like you said, we do see him softening as the show goes on, but there's a time between when this comic ends and when that first scene hits with him in it in the show that I would assume he's just a jerk. He goes on about how he refuses to work with Starfleet for a good portion of this story, and then kind of gets forced into having to say, well, it's going to happen whether I want it to or not, so I might as well be a part of it so at least I can have some control over what happens with the spores. Because remember, he also assumed that it was going to be a weapon. He never thought, in his mind, he never thought propulsion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he still comes across very much like a jerk. And the whole thing with Tilly in this comic kind of threw me off, because when I watched Discovery and their first interactions in the first few episodes, I would never have thought that Stamets was someone who brought Tilly on the ship or wanted Tilly there. I got the impression that she had to kind of prove herself, and he was just like, you know, I don't know who you are. I don't know, you know, if you're up to snuff. I don't know if you can do what I need you to do. And then it's like, okay, I'm warming up to you. And maybe this still works in that case where it's like, okay, she wrote fan letters. I'll bring her on. I'll see how she is. We'll see how it goes. And he was just trying her out. But I was kind of surprised by that in this comic.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Stamets is always a little bit of an enigma. Like, for example, his whole relationship with Culbert when we first see them, it's very adversarial and sniping and that kind of thing. But that's kind of the basis of the relationship and how they warmed up to one another, as we actually see in this comic as well. And I feel like sometimes what you see isn't exactly what you get with Stamets. So I feel like he puts on that, I don't want to say facade, because I think it is actually him being him. But at the same time, there's more depth to him. There's some emotion there and some, you know, I could see him saying like, oh, this is ridiculous. You're silly. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Yeah, get her on my team. She can be an asset, you know, like just kind of talking out both sides of his mouth, depending on who the audience is, I guess. I don't know.
Right. Well, and there's certain people that kind of deserve to be in a lab. And he's like one of those people where maybe he's not very good socially with people, and he comes very cross to people. And it's like he just needs his own little world and just him and his spores. Because you notice the nicer he is and the happier he is when he's with spores. It's like he's in love with them and he's floating through them in his mind and stuff. And then somebody walks in, and it's like, what do you want?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I never even thought of how he comes across with Tilly in the beginning of the show, but it does seem to fit his character to me because of the way he treats Culber when this all starts. That's just kind of who he is. He's going to push and prod and try and find your buttons. And that doesn't necessarily mean he doesn't like you. I mean, I know plenty of people like that. I work in construction. We're all like that. If I like you, I'm going to torture yep. you. And if I don't like you, I just ignore you.
Oh, wow. That means Dan likes me because he tortures me a lot.
He must like you a lot.
No comment. So, no comment.
See, he's so
here first, folks.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because I didn't really... Maybe it's because it's a comic book, right? I mean, like, I'm reading along with you guys for the comics when you guys talk about them on Literary Treks. But to me, Stamets didn't feel like so much of a jerk in this, and maybe it was because it was a comic version of him, you know, a comic book character version of him. Because he seemed to have, like, a smile all the time, like, when they drew him. You know, he seemed to be a little more pleasant, and just, I didn't... But maybe it's also because the most recent episodes of the show that I've seen are after Stamets' character has grown, and he's not quite so abrasive. So I could be also putting that onto what I'm reading as well. But I didn't quite get him as abrasive. Yeah, he had the comment where he's like, oh, I'd appreciate it if you stopped humming that song, you know, and Culber's like, oh, you're rude, and I think you think you're funny, and but to me, that scene didn't come off the way that I thought it would have come off. It came off a little bit more pleasant than I thought it would have come off, so, you know. That's just kind of my interpretation.
But I think, I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think he's less of a jerk here than he is in the first couple episodes, but still kind of a jerk.
No, I think it's partly the intention to make you see that, yeah, he's turning around and grinning because it's all a test to him. He's seeing if Culber's going to go along with it or if he's just going to get upset and move on. You know what I mean? Like, this is part of who, like I said, this is what we do in my industry. We test, and if I can push you over the edge, well, I won that day, but I like you. I respect you more, actually, because you were willing to be able to go through that, you know? And it seems like the fact that Culber has comebacks for him is what brings him in to really warming up to Culber, that Culber doesn't just hate him or just ignore him. He kind of gives it back to him, and that's what he likes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of... I think the familiarity we have with his character kind of informs how we see him in this comic as well. Because, like, even just going back and rewatching the first few episodes of Discovery, yeah, he's abrasive to Burnham and stuff, but there's kind of more that I know about his character behind all that that kind of makes me go, oh, he's not as big a jerk as I thought he was. But I don't know. That's just my opinion.
And when he's abrasive to Burnham, I mean, everyone was abrasive to Burnham
right.
at the time.
Too. Yeah, she had a very particular
So putting that just on him would be kind of rude, because the only one who's not abrasive to her is Tilly. And really, she started being abrasive towards her unintentionally when she's like, the only Michael I know is a mutant. Oops. Like, so everyone really just didn't like her, except for Tilly warmed up to her really fast, and Lorca liked her. But everyone else, Saru hated her, and even though he was there, still remembered the facts as the way everyone else heard them, not the way they actually happened.
Well, yeah, in Discovery, when that show first, those first few episodes, everyone seemed a bit off, like standoffish and critical of others, and it didn't seem like the happy family we got later in the episode, the bonding.
And that makes sense, right? Because you're knee deep in war, so everyone's going to be on edge to some degree anyway.
Leader is Lorca.
Yeah, I was going to say, not to mention the influence of Lorca, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, we keep saying that, you know, Stamets comes across as a jerk, and I don't know if that's really fair. He is abrasive, as mentioned earlier, and so that comes across as maybe being a jerk, but I don't think he is a jerk. It's just his personality.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. When we see him in, what's the third episode, Context is for Kings, like, he's a jerk to Burnham. You know, like, Lurker, you know, like, just, and like the terms that he uses when he's talking to her, he's a jerk to her. So,
yeah, but she's also a criminal in their minds.
Yes, she is.
And this is being forced into his lab against his wishes.
Right. Is this the point? This is the point where she gets assigned to him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which he was under the assumption that he was going to get to pick his people, right? Which is also in contention in the comic book. So I don't know why that happens twice, but it does. Mm-hmm.
Because Lorca. Because Lorca's a jerk. Just a bunch of jerks.
But Lorca is a jerk. And in the comic book, so since we're talking about, let's talk about the book a little bit too. In the comic book, he's like, well, you have to give me at least one person that's mine. And then when it comes up and Burnham shows up, he's like, only I make decisions on what happens here. So what changed? Because you weren't making decisions in the comic. Again, not canon, but let's just pretend it is for a moment. It's not your decision. You just got Tilly. He was able to get Tilly, and that was it. Even though he was trying to set up his whole group, but he makes it out in that third episode as if he put together his team, and this is a intrusion on his team from an outside source, and that's another reason she's a criminal. You know, she's a mutineer. She's like the worst criminal in Starfleet. On top of that, he doesn't want her on his team, and he doesn't want anyone he doesn't handpick. And then we learn, well, he wasn't handpicking him anyway.
Mm-hmm. Also, and this might be me reading way too much into this, but I feel like because Tilly ends up being so instrumental in what happens later in the Mirror Universe, part of me when I was reading this wondered if in the back of my mind, Stamets is like, I need to have one person. And Lorca's like, oh, I want to make my own. Oh, Tilly, that's who you want. Yeah, okay, sure.
Oh, that's a good point, because Lorca knows who Tilly really is in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, right. The captain of the ISS Discovery, right? So,
yeah.
She was kind of instrumental to what Lorca had planned, too.
Even if you're reading too much into it, I am too now. Makes perfect sense, though. That's the one choice he got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I like that, Dan. That's really good. I like that. That's awesome. That's now a part of my headcanon. So
awesome.
Oh, you want Tilly? Sure.
Yeah, sure.
And then he looks like he gave him a win.
I mean, I really object to this, but if you have to have her, I suppose.
So let's talk a little bit about the spore drive in this and the development of it. So the timeline of this 40-page story is over a period of about 5 years. 4 or 5 years prior to the show starting, which is kind of interesting because the first part of the book that we get is this Federation starship is getting something off an asteroid and they try and beam up the crew and they die and they save the sample. So it doesn't look like it fits in the comic, but I mean, reading it, and I've read it twice now, that's got to be the mushrooms mm-hmm. that they found on this rock, right? Is that what everybody's assuming here?
Yeah, they mentioned that they're only found on one asteroid or something like that, like later on. So
yeah, because
I assume mm-hmm. so, yeah.
Otherwise that page just has no use.
Yeah.
Right. Those couple of pages.
Yeah, it never comes up again.
So Stamets starts investigating with his friend, which I can't remember his name. The guy that we see in context is for Kings on the monitor. And they start to, you know, investigate this spore and try and develop it and whatnot. And Stamets stumbles up, and this is the one part of the comic that I didn't like. Stamets's logic leap into what the spore could do. I was the only real sticking point I had in the comic for something I didn't like, because he's like, oh, the name of this means star path. What if it's more than just mushrooms that you could only find traveling the stars? What if that meant they were interconnected and they were a star path? And I'm like, yeah, okay, it's a 40-page comic, I guess.
Yeah.
That's the only complaint I have about the comic. I think it's a wonderful comic otherwise. That's the only thing. But I did want to bring that up because that really stuck out like a sore thumb to me, and I wondered what you guys thought. So.
No, I thought the same thing. I mean, it didn't bother me that much, but I did think it seemed a little too easy and too convenient. It was almost like a Sherlock Holmes thing. It's like, you know, oh, he can just figure out with a snap of his fingers of, you know, this is the resolution, this is what it led to. But like you said, it's a 48-page comic, so you can only get so much into it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you bring it up, because after I read it, I thought to myself, wow, that's cheesy. And then I thought, you know, maybe I'm reading it wrong, and that he's just making a joke about the fact that it is called Star Path, and he's already figuring out that you can use it to travel. Not that it was named Star Path because you could travel. Does that make sense to everyone?
I'm going to look up the term here. Like, is that what it's called? Is Star Path?
I believe like, so.
I got to try and so, bring yeah. up what it is but that he calls it here.
And, while we're and I probably just changed that in my head because that is really, really cheesy.
Yeah. It's probably and more I your kind of way. I had a similar sort of interpretation where it wasn't necessarily like, oh, it was named that because it can do this. It was the name kind of got him thinking about something, and then he did some tests and, you know, like, because like you said, it's just a 48-page comic. There's a lot more to this story, I think. So, you know, I like to think it just kind of twigged him onto something and made him think about things and then do his research and do a bunch of other stuff and then figure it out kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's kind of like, oh, that's clever. I didn't realize that was going to work out, but look at the coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because ultimately, it is just a coincidence, because whoever named it obviously didn't know that that was its properties.
Right, right. Yeah, and I looked it up, and it is Star Paths. That's what he calls it. So that's what's called, the translation of the name. So.
Mm-hmm. Too bad they didn't call it Star Treks.
Star Tracks. But so they work on this for a couple of years, and they develop it. They talk at symposiums, which gets the attention of Starfleet. You know, the scientific community is laughing at them, saying this is ridiculous, but it does pique Starfleet's interest, and we get our first look at Starfleet trying to talk to them and say, hey, we're interested in your research. We want to hire you on for Starfleet. They reject it at first and continue researching, but they eventually decide to make a test, and they after a whole bunch of research, they realize that this thing can transport things. So they transport this frog-looking thing from one planet to another, and they transport it to Deneva, which, you know, maybe this is responsible for the pancake aliens, but, you know, and from Operation Annihilate. But, the reason why he makes this logic leap here, though, is that he tastes the spores, and they're minty.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about that scene because it's, you know, the height of stupidity, but also it ends up kind of being one of my favorite scenes too, just because, you know, on the show, I think high Stamets is best Stamets. And yeah, he's a little out of it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's like I said earlier, he's so fixated on his spores and he's so in love with them that it almost makes sense that he's at some point just want to taste them. Just, he wants to experience everything about them. And luckily they are minty and he can have fresh breath from it. I hope to go to a convention at some point and find Stamets gum with spore minty fresh breath.
Mushroom mint flavor. Gum.
I don't know. I really didn't have a problem with the scene itself, except for the whole extra minty part. Because yes. You figure by now he's done enough tests to know that this thing's not going to kill him if he eats it, right?
You would hope.
It's very well known that mushrooms can kill you if you eat them. Now, you would assume that they don't forget that before Discovery shows up.
Yes. So we get to my favorite page in the whole comic. My favorite page is after he's done this, he actually off screen, if you want to say it that, he sends his information off to Dr. Culber to take a look at and just make sure he's okay healthy wise. And Dr. Culber calls him and, Culber says, "You weren't just using it as an excuse to talk to me." And Stamets says, "Of course I was. Do me a favor. I'm up late going over this data. Keep me company." And Stamets and Culber says, "Of course." And then Stamets replies, "Thank you. So tell me about your day." And to me, like, this is the start of their relationship. So this is my favorite page in the comic, you know, knowing where we get to in the show. I love this. I think it's a great moment. To me, this is where the relationship really starts. So. I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was good.
A long distance relationship too. I mean, so they met in person, but they've been apart. So obviously they've been in touch over time and reaching out to each other long distance. And you're right. This is the point where we see, they've established a relationship with each other long distance. And, this is the first hint to that there's something more here than just acquaintances.
Mm-hmm. But, and remember, the exact flip side of this is, The other researcher is currently losing his marriage as this is going on.
Oh, yeah. You know what? He is.
Which is in the book for no reason other than I wanted to bring it up right now to point out that these two are completely different stories. And I can only imagine that's the only reason why that's in the story.
Yeah, to kind of provide a bit of a foil or a mirror to what's going on with
right. There seems to be no other reason to have his wife this mad at him for this long. And every time... she's like, "No, but you guys can come back. I promise." "You're not coming back?" Like, it just seems like she keeps harping on this. And the only reason for this is when this happens, it shows that this brought Stamets together while destroying another relationship in the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, he really is a jerk, isn't he?
Well, no, I mean, Stamets didn't necessarily destroy the relationship, right? I mean, but his friend's definitely a jerk because he... She's like terraforming planets and trying to save like whole species. And he's like, "Nah, I got to chill with the minty mushrooms and my buddy." So like, like he's a 60s hippie.
Well, he made his own choice. His friend made his own choice. But that's a good point that this is kind of a parallel story that's going on. It's an opposite mirror story that's going on for Stamets and Culber. But at this time, they're worried about losing funding. And their next step is human trials, but they aren't certified that they can do it yet. They're not confident that they can do it yet. So one of the lab assistants, you know, sees Stamets and his partner fighting and decides to make the jump by himself and ends up dying. And with a little bit of further study, Stamets realizes what went wrong, makes a few adjustments, and makes the jump himself, the first jump. And so I mean, like, that's a pretty crazy thing to like make that jump so soon after one of your staff members dies from making the jump.
Mm-hmm. And I think, again, this kind of shows what kind of person he really is deep down because, you know, like we've said, he seems abrasive. He seems kind of like a jerk, but I think he genuinely cares about the people. I don't want to say under his command because it's not like a Starfleet situation, but the people he's responsible for in his lab and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like he's like, you know, "Oh God, I can't let anybody else do this. I've got to, you know, be the one to bear this risk."
Mm-hmm. Patrick?
And he makes a point to say in it that either way, when this jump is over, when this transport is over, this is over. Either it'll succeed or it'll fail and the whole program shut down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is pretty much his last thing. I'm not going to lose another friend, colleague, partner, whatever to this. I'm going to be the one to either die or we're going to move forward with the research, but we stop now and we decide now.
Mm-hmm. Am I the only one who thought about transport beaming from the Kelvin timeline? That's what kind of this reminded me of, is going long distance from one place to another. I know it's not the same thing, but that's what it reminded me of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, similar ideas for sure.
And then I guess we'll wrap the story here. So after this test, they have another symposium. And at this conference that they're talking at, Starfleet comes up to them and tells them that that they want to use it for transport, you know, for transportation, for moving, for what is the word I'm looking for here? What is the word they used? Propulsion.
Propulsion.
Thank you. So they want to use it for propulsion. And this is what finally gets Stamets's, you know, ears perked up with his intrigue, and he decides to join Starfleet. They give him a commission of lieutenant. So, I mean, like, that's something that I felt early on in the series that I guessed early on. I'm like, this guy doesn't seem like he actually is Starfleet. I wonder if Starfleet, but at the time I thought Starfleet would have brought him in, military drafted him. Right. So, but I remember saying that back when we were talking about episode 3 on The Edge, that I'm like, I don't know that this guy's gone through Starfleet. And this shows that he hasn't. He hasn't gone through Starfleet. He's been drafted, which seemed interesting to me, though, right? That he was given that rank because, you know, like they talk about him being a civilian. And I mean, Miles O'Brien's a civilian and he's not like a lieutenant. He's a chief, right? He's a different ranking system. Right. And I don't understand how all of that ranking structure works myself. So I think it's interesting that he's a lieutenant. So
well, you're so in the Army anyway, your lieutenants are your lowest commissioned officers, mm-hmm. right? So he was probably brought in at the lowest commissioning officer they have, right? Even though they do their system so weird, because there's ensigns that are officers, but that's just not the way military breaks down, right? Yeah, because you have non-commissioned officers, then officers, and lieutenants would be your lowest. Like, if you go to college and go through RTC, you would go in as a lieutenant. Mm-hmm. So they probably did a similar rationale by bringing him in because he's the one who controls the spore drive. Him and his partner mm-hmm. come in as a lieutenant so they can control their own units. Because mm-hmm. you're not going to have lieutenants and such listening to a private, mm-hmm. right? It just wouldn't work out that way, or a sergeant even. So they sign a contract.
But how does that work on Deep Space Nine with Chief O'Brien? Because he was the chief engineer, and he had lieutenants probably reporting to him in ensigns.
He probably did, but that's it didn't make sense then. It doesn't make sense now. Well, except for the fact that it's not a Starfleet base.
Ah, that's a good point.
So they're just there as kind of the help, right? So.
But he's also technically, I think his term is chief of operations. He's not chief engineer, right? So I don't know if that makes a difference as well, but by calling it chief of operations.
He could, because chief of operations he could be the head of a department, and then you would fall in under a rank system in that department, mm-hmm. which they could have done with Colbert too, but you're in war, so it makes more sense for him to be, in my opinion, it makes more sense for him to be a lieutenant than it would just be the chief of science officer, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? It could work, but...
I could be wrong about this, but I, and again, I'm not an expert at all, but I seem to remember, like, during the draft, if they drafted, for example, surgeons who had, you know, doctorate degrees, they would draft them as officers as opposed to non-commissioned. You know, they would kind of be like equivalent to officer training school. They would take your degree and apply it or something like that. I could be wrong, but...
The last thing the military wants to do, despite all of whatever people believe about it, the last thing they would want to really do is to put somebody that has this, you know, 10 years or 5 years of surgical experience and put them in the field with a bayonet and hope they don't get shot.
Right. You'd
want them back at the hospitals, right? And you could do that even with them lower, but there's more of a chance that their number gets shuffled and they're off to war. It's much easier to hold them back if their rank is higher to start. Plus, college gives you rank, period. In the military. I mean, just having a degree. The higher your degrees, the higher your rank would be anyway. Mm. And then officer training would jump you even higher than that usually. Mm-hmm. During wartime, rules are suspended, though. They do what's best for the military at the time for the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And presumably Stamets would have some sort of higher education based on what he's working on and stuff. So
yeah. And he already
I've never heard them call him doctor, but he might well be.
You know, he doesn't want to go. So if they told him, well, you'll come in as like an E3, I'm coming in as an enlisted three. Now, I know there's no pay here, that we're not worried about money, but just the rank involved, you'd say, no, I'd rather do this research on my own and find my own funding. Mm-hmm. I find it interesting that also at this point we see that the friend says to him, you know, I've left, you know, she's left me and we're done for, so I have nothing else really to stay around here for, so I'm going to go with Starfleet, so you're either going to come or not. And that's when he decides to go, and then we see his friend die in a few episodes. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting that we got to that whole story, because he just disappears, but I did like the fact that it did show he did have, even through all this time that we keep saying he's a bit of a jerk, he's had a very close friend, and loses that friend pretty early in the series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that does.
And even that first episode we do see he has genuine emotion for this friend of his, right. So even then there were hints of it, so.
Right.
Excellent, right on. Well, any final thoughts you guys have on the comic here? So our first Star Trek Discovery annual. Bruce, let's start with you.
I enjoyed it because we got some backstory on Stamets and Kober and the Spore Drive. But at the same time, I don't really feel like I learned that much more about Stamets as a character. He pretty much is what I expected and what I've learned from the TV series. So learning anything new about the character, no, but just having the backstory of how he got there is interesting to see. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it.
Dan, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I love that we get a little bit more backstory. I'm a sucker. I'm mushy, so I really liked the Stamets-Culber stuff. I liked seeing that initial flirting and how that relationship formed. That was really cool. And I got to say, reading this, you know, just almost as a bonus episode of Discovery, hearing Anthony Rapp's voice while I read this, and even at the end getting a little bit of bonus Jason Isaacs as Lorca was a lot of fun. So, you know, it felt like Discovery to me. It felt in that same vein, and the story fit really well. And I actually appreciated even just the little bit more we learn about Stamets in this, mm-hmm. and just kind of seeing those relationships, seeing him with his friend on the Glen, and like I said, that initial budding of that relationship with Culber, I thought was a lot of fun.
Patrick, final thoughts?
I really enjoyed the comic. I liked it from start to finish. I love the way they told the story, the way they presented the story. I love the artwork in the story. I mean, I liked it all from start to finish. Mm-hmm. The only questions I really had when it was done was at the end, I believe it says something to the effect of "to be continued" on the last beginning. Page.
Just as the beginning,
that's what it says, right? So now, my question is, do we wait a year for the next annual? Do we get a comic book that comes out, a regular comic book, you know, like a 15-page regular normal comic book that comes out regularly every month? Or is it just that ends and the show starts? What is the next part to this?
Well, right now they've got there's the Klingon comics that are coming out every other month. There's been three of the four parts that have come out so far. I'm guessing that they'll probably continue on bi-monthly with different short, you know, three or four part things. I think that's what they're talking about at Vegas.
Yeah, right, there's a mini series set in the Mirror Universe is the next, I think, four part comic series as well.
This particular story ends here.
Yeah.
And we're just supposed to watch the next part.
Mm. Yeah, it just leads right into the show then. Or
I kind of wanted a little bit more of the middle section there. I kind of did.
Yeah, because it's interesting. My final thoughts on this is just, it's interesting on where the timeline is. Like, I'm not quite sure where to place this on the timeline. Like, this comic ends, and it feels like it ends shortly before Context is for Kings, but maybe not, because they aren't really talking about the war. And when we get to Context is for Kings, the war had been going on for about 6 months. So this ends, I would say this ends probably at the earliest 7 months before Context is for Kings is probably when this starts. So maybe about a month before Vulcan Hello is when I would have to say that this probably takes place. But the timeline was interesting that this, you know, this is over, you know, a 5 year period, basically a 4 or 5 year period that this comic book takes place over. So I thought that was mm-hmm. kind of interesting. So it's a fair chunk of Stamets' life that we get to see here. So,
and good job on doing the math, because it was a lot of 5 years later, 3 months later, 2 months later, 4 months later to keep track of.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Bruce and Dan, for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you when you're not on the edge? Because you guys were just on last week.
Yeah, I mean, this has been fun. It's kind of cool to get out and do something new. But yeah, you can find me co-hosting Literary Treks along with Bruce, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. So, you know, if you enjoyed this Discovery comic, if this is the first comic you've picked up, you know, check out the show and maybe pick up some other ones as they come out. We'll talk about all of them. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/KurtRatsProductions. You can find me on Twitter at KurtRats. That's KERTRATS. And in the Babel Conference, of course.
And you can find me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. And then when new episodes of Discovery came on this past season, I was doing Live from the Edge with Brandy Jackala. And so you can go back and listen to those. But also, if you like Star Wars, you can check me out on the Star Wars Report podcast. But I will say, if you like reading books, especially Star Trek books, go to our Goodreads group. So go to Goodreads and search for Literary Treks. We'll let you in and you can be part of that discussion too.
Excellent. Right on. Well, talking about spore drives and frogs is not the only thing we're discussing here on the network this week, so please take a listen to this clip and see what else you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
She is going to be one of the greatest comedic stars of this century. She is going to be amazing, and I love her. She's hilarious. But Tilly has become solely comedic relief in this episode. And Tilly is not just comedic relief. She is smart. Tilly is a smart person. She right. knows her job. She is going to be one of the greatest captains in Starfleet. I believe that.
Warp 5.
Wait, hold on. You don't have a reflection. There's beams of light traversing the ship, cutting you. And my lack of logic is what's astounding here.
Yeah, because you made an assumption based on zero evidence.
Except for the fact that they just melted.
Yeah, the three we that we've seen, we don't know that what the rest of them are doing. This is the first one.
We don't know if it was anymore.
Okay, let's scan the melting.
Earl Grey.
But yes, I was a huge Star Trek fan. Never in my life ever imagined that I would ever appear or meet some of those fabulous people on that show. Never thought, and meet Gene Roddenberry. I never thought I would ever meet. Most of my life, I never thought would happen. So I feel very, very fortunate.
The 602 Club.
And it really speaks to me, Halliday's ego, even of I'm going to make everyone love what I love, and then that's how they'll win the contest. You know, and it's sad that it feels like it all became that, what you're saying, Matt, of it, everyone not even having the creativity to have their own stuff anymore. It's all about what Halliday was interested in. And then I think, too, it really also could be even a commentary about greed in society now, that everything really revolved around wanting to get his, and you know, his fortune. So they did all the research they had to do because they just wanted the money.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join in the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcast. Now, extra minty. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select The Edge. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. Patrick, Where can people find you when you're not eating mushrooms off the ground?
Well, they can find me on Twitter. Oh, man, I was going to use that one. So they can find me on Twitter at MagicDrop5. It's one word. The five is a number, not an actual word. So I guess it's one word and number attached. And they can find me, of course, with you on the Enterprise over at Warp 5. Every Friday we come to you. And I check out the Babel Conference from time to time. You know, I pop in and out of there, but I've been so busy with other stuff lately that you probably have a better chance catching me on a baseball field with my son. So, but other than that, those are the places you can find me. And if you hit me up on Twitter, I'll be sure to answer you. Brandon, where can people find you when you're not shoving interns out of the way so you can try to warp yourself across the galaxy?
And dying in the process?
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter, at Brandon Metella. You can find me on Warp 5 as well with Patrick and Brandy. And you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with my good friends Chris and Tom, where we're talking all about Hitchcock movies on Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at Brandon Metella, and I poke my head up every once in a while in the Babel Conference. I don't really say much. I just kind of been looking around lately. But, yeah, I'm always there. And if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you will find all the details on patreon.com/trekfm. Well, at this time, we'd like to thank our associate producers, the wonderful associate producers of The Edge, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoab Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, and Cornelia Reutner. Thank you guys so, so much for supporting The Edge and Trek FM as well. We really, really appreciate it. Well, I think that's about everything. Hey, Patrick?
Yep, sounds about right.
Excellent, right on. Well, join us again next week. We're going to have special guest Lee Hutchison join us to talk all about Ash Tyler. But until then...
Maybe I'll show up too.
What's that?
Maybe I'll show up too.
Oh, yeah, and Patrick will be there too. Yes. Until next time... Tune in to see what we've been doing here on the edge of Federation space.